listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Music therapy as a tool for severe pain is an emerging science that's being used particularly in the hospice setting at the end of life. Dr. Russell Hilliard is an expert in this field. He's in the Sacramento area today and tomorrow for two presentations that are open to the public. So we invited him into the studio to talk about the use of trained music therapists in the hospital and hospice setting. Dr. Hilliard, glad to have you here.
Thank you so much,
Beth. Thanks for joining us. Will you distinguish music therapy, the way we're talking about it, from how anyone might use music to soothe or calm someone?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the question. I think this is the most confusing thing about music therapy is we all sort of intuitively know music is good for us. We use it to exercise. We use it in romance, to dance with our partners. We use it to motivate ourselves or to calm us. So how do we use it in a therapeutic way, and what's the difference between a well-intended musician and a board-certified music therapist? So a board-certified music therapist is specifically trained in functional anatomy and physiology, lots of psychology courses, human development courses, and then we're taught to use things like the ISO principle, ISO principle. What we do is we look at the patient and we say, gosh, where's their pain on a scale of 1 to 10? And if it's an 8, 9, 10, they're in a lot of pain. Typically, if you have a lot of pain, your respirations are very shallow and labored. Your affect is very tense. Your body is intense. Your respirations, we can look at the top of the chest and you can see that they're very shallow and people are gasping for air kind of thing. So the music therapist is going to take patient-preferred music. There's no prescribed sing this song for pain. It is whatever you like. So if you like gospel music, country western music, classic rock, disco, whatever it is that you like, we're going to sing that music, but we're going to modify it. We're going to modify it based on your body, where your affect is, your body language, your pain level. So we're going to sing loud and fast, even if the song doesn't go that way. We match the music qualities of how fast or how slow, how loud or how soft to the patient's perceived discomfort. And then through an entrainment experience, we actually calm them down. And I have to tell you, I've been doing this for 25 years, and it's always magical to me. I have taken a patient who's been in a lot of pain, sang their favorite music using the ISO principle, and 30 minutes later, they're asleep. It's very powerful to be able to use music to have that kind of pain alleviation. It works really well with the medications. We always say it doesn't replace medications in end-of-life care, but they go hand in hand.
We have a YouTube clip that we'll post on our website because it really gives a great example of a therapist, Heidi Webster, taking a patient through this process. Tell me more of the science. What's happening in the brain when this works?
So it's really powerful what happens in the brain. They've looked at PET scans of people who look at art, do a crossword puzzle, read poetry, and listen to music, and the entire brain lights up when we listen to music. Not only does music therapy affect the physical sensation of the body. Remember, the body is a rhythmic being. Mm-hmm. Our heart rate is rhythmic. Our respiratory rate is rhythmic. But it also stimulates long-lost emotions and memories. We've had a patient who was sort of ho-hum, you know, very polite, would let us in, occasionally would let us sing some of her favorite songs, but didn't really have a connection with us. And one day she asked for the song Because. It's an old, old wedding song, and my intern and I didn't know it, so we learned it. And it goes, because you came to me with not save love. And immediately we began to sing it. She had this wistful tear that just kind of trickled down, and I said, I see that this song touched you. How is it so? And her whole face lit up and she said, that was my wedding song. Mm. And she described her wedding day as though she had just come back from her honeymoon. So music has the ability to take us back to another place in time. It can take us back to another emotional experience. And that's why we have to have board certified music therapists to be able to process those very powerful memories and life lessons and life purposes, and also the emotions that can come up with music.
We'll continue this conversation after the show ends, and we'll post more of it on our website. But just to wrap up, will you explain to me how new the field is and how important in end-of-life times in hospice?
Sure. So music therapy was really formed when the veterans came back from World War II. That's how we discovered music was going to be really good for people with post-traumatic stress disorder, a concept we didn't even know of at the time. And in 1983, the hospice Medicare benefit was instituted, and people were using music therapeutically but didn't really understand the powerful effects of music therapy. In in 1994, the first board-certified music therapist, to my knowledge, was hired in hospice. That was me. And we discovered that music therapy was excellent for all the domains of end-of-life care, whether they're physical, spiritual, emotional, or social.
What's the reaction when you say music therapy? And how much educating do you have to do in this field?
So I think today most people realize that music is good for you. And the difference between a well-intended musician working in a hospital as a volunteer and what a board-certified music therapist does requires a good deal of education to the layperson. Different places in the country also respond differently. If some people are very, you know, yoga friendly, for example, and new age kind of thinking, those folks intuitively know that music is good for you. Other people who may be more conservative say, gosh, I'm not sure that that's really therapeutic or medicine. And then when we talk about what they use music for, they instantly realize that it is. The number one most requested song of hospice music therapy is Amazing Grace. I've surveyed music therapists all over the nation for years, and it keeps showing up as the number one. And I think oftentimes, why is that in this very diverse country that we live in? Why does it remain Amazing Grace? And I think it's because I had a Jewish patient in New York once who requested Amazing Grace. And when I sang Amazing Grace, she smiled and she said, "Yeah, you're probably wondering why a nice Jewish gal asked for Amazing Grace." And I said, "I am." And she said, "Honey, it's a folk song." So I think music looks at our soul, our spirit in different ways. We respond to it in different ways. And people intuitively get that. To teach them, gosh, it takes a baccalaureate degree or a master's degree in music therapy to be able to do music therapy, has a further conversation. But when we teach people through the eyes of our patients, I think they easily understand.
We do have a section of a clip with Heidi Webster that we are going to share now. Let's take a listen to this and then we'll talk more.
I have a patient who is 84 years old and is diagnosed with advanced Alzheimer's disease. She had a stroke earlier in her life, so her hand is extremely contracted and tense and stays in this position. But her main problem is the inability to communicate. She tries and attempts to make full sentences, but the only thing that she can say is ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. She will be able to answer yes or no questions, but is unable to express what she needs and communicate with her friends and her family members. And that's extremely hard on them. Maria?
Yeah.
How are you feeling today? You waving to the camera?
Yeah.
But one thing that's special about this patient is that she is able to sing. And that is a miracle through music, that music can provide a way for her to communicate with her loved ones.
In his hands.
Yeah.
Should we sing that song for them?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll start it. You join me, okay? He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
Music is very, very powerful in that it activates both hemispheres of the brain. So when there is a communication deficit or some sort of speech deficit, music can provide a way for communication to be seamless through singing.
Yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. The Bible tells me so.
Beautiful.
That was music therapist Heidi Webster. There was a lot going on there, Dr. Mm-hmm. Hilliard. Mm-hmm. But in the end, what's the goal of what's happening? Because we are talking about end of life. We are talking about quality of life and pain. So what outcome are you hoping for?
So I think people's general perception of hospice care is death and dying. And I tell people all the time that hospice does prepare people for the final moment, but our focus is on life and living. So what we didn't hear in that clip was the family's reaction. And I think that's what's so important. Also, you heard the patient's reaction. She was living. She was having a quality of life. If we saw her, we would have seen her smiling and enjoying her life. That's what we all want until the natural death occurs, is quality of life. And music therapy has a way of bringing that to people. For the family member, can you imagine if you were her daughter what you heard all the time was ba 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 ba, and then you came to visit when Heidi, the music therapist, was there and you heard mom singing, right? We had a patient at a nursing home whose daughter was visiting us, and we were using our Namaste care program. We have a specialized dementia program that does all the sensory stimulation for patients and brings them back. And the aide was blowing bubbles with the patient. So I was singing, "I'm forever blowing bubbles." And the patient sang, "Pretty bubbles in the air." And the daughter said, "Wait, my mother just sang." And I said, "Yes, your mom can sing." She goes, "My mother can't sing. She can't even speak. She doesn't know her name or my name." And I said, "She can sing. Watch. I'm forever blowing bubbles." And the woman sang, "Pretty bubbles in the air." And the daughter just cried, because in that moment, she realized my mom is still here. And that's what hospice does, and that's what hospice music therapy does, is it promotes quality of life, that we don't have to be thinking always about death and dying. How do we make this moment count? How can I create an interaction between a husband and a wife, a daughter and a mother? How can I create those moments? And music has a beautiful way of doing that.
And from a science standpoint, music tapped a different part of the brain,
yes,
where the words and the singing were. So somebody listening to this might think, how do I get this at the hospice center where my mom or dad or family member are? How do I get this in the hospital setting where there's a severe pain issue?
So the good news is music therapy is growing tremendously in end-of-life care. The majority of hospices are using board-certified music therapists. Here in Sacramento, the only hospice that is employing board-certified music therapists is Seasons Hospice. But throughout the state of California, lots of hospices are employing board-certified music therapists. Seasons Hospice is the largest employer of board-certified music therapists worldwide. Mm-hmm. And so we shouldn't be in a state in our country where we wait until the end-of-life care to get this kind of amazing care. The good news is lots of pediatric hospitals are seeing the benefits of music therapy in reducing lengths of stay, reducing the amounts of medications children need in oncology settings and so forth. And so general hospitals are picking up on that as well. So through more research, more advocacy, we'll be able to spread the good word of music therapy.
Well, I can offer this experiment. From my experience sitting across from you and many, many musicians that come into the studio, if you sit across from someone, be in conversation, but then ask them to start singing, mm-hmm. you can feel, I think, the visceral reaction. Yes. There is something different that happens in the human body when singing begins. And even if you can't explain it, just to try that experiment helps open the window to the fact that it does take you to a different place. There is something very different about it.
Thank you. It does, Beth. And, you know, singing, making music live is a very intimate experience. And I think we all crave that intimacy. There's interesting research about nurses, how much time they spend with dying patients in the hospital. And if a patient is dying, there's good data that suggests that the nurse spends less time with patients who are dying. So what we need when we're at the end of life, in the final months of life, focusing on quality of life, and then at the imminent stage of life, is to not be alone. So we want to be with somebody and we want to have that intimacy. What do you say? You know, how do you hold a death vigil? Well, making music, the music that you like. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we all spent our last moment on this earth surrounded by the people we want to be there, listening to the music that we want to hear? I don't know what it is for you, Beth, but for me, it would probably be Cher, right? I love Cher. And to hear Cher sing a recording is never going to change. The recording will always stay the same. But maybe my music therapist, when I'm taking my last breath, is singing it differently. She's slowing it down and making it like a ballad. If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, is different than the way that Cher recorded it, mm-hmm. and more appropriate for that stage of my life, but will have a deep, deep meaning and comfort for me. So I hope for all of us that our life has full of quality towards the end and that we're not focusing just on the final moment. Hospice is so much about life and living, and that's what music therapy and hospice does.
Thank you, Dr. Hilliard. Thank you for your time and for the conversation. I think it's an important one.
Thank you for having me.
That is Dr. Russell Hilliard. So I will add again that you have presentations today from 5:30 to 7:30 open to the public at the Atria El Camino Assisted Living Community, and then tomorrow from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Brookdale Folsom Assisted Living Community. Again, this is Dr. Russell Hilliard. Thank you so much. You are with Seasons Hospice and Palliative Care based out of Chicago, and that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Our producers are Jen Picard, Cody Drabble, and Bert Johnson. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us.